Welcome to EIR Talks. This week we present the LaRouche Connection, an audio-video news magazine produced by Executive Intelligence Review, which was founded in 1974 by Lyndon H. LaRouche.
Good day. This is Nancy Spanis for the LaRouche Connection, and we're pleased to bring you on this edition a discussion of our nation's public health crisis. As you know, everybody in the United States is now concerned about bioterrorism, public health, and the danger of a spreading growth of epidemics or other kinds of threats to their physical survival. And we've been fortunate to be able to bring together for a roundtable discussion here three members of Lyndon LaRouche's National Medical Task Force who are working in D.C. and have quite a bit to say on this crisis. First, we have Lynn Speed of the LaRouche Movement, who is on the task force, one of the leading forces on there. We have Dr. Aleem Mohammed, who is the Minister of Health of the Nation of Islam and the head of the Abundant Life Clinic in Washington, D.C. And we have Charlene Gordon, who is a nurse who worked for 18 years at D.C. General Hospital, the only public hospital in Washington, D.C., which has now been closed down. Now, I want to start with a breaking development that will take us into the subject that we have tonight. It's something that occurred on November 14th at a special congressional briefing on public hospitals held on Capitol Hill. And something quite extraordinary happened there. You could call it Congresswoman Waters, Maxine Waters of California, sends a public apology to Lyndon LaRouche. And it went as follows. All of a sudden, in the middle of this hearing, which was being conducted by a number of congressmen, including Congressman Conyers, Congresswoman Waters said the following. Let me say this. I am not a person without controversy. We've had a group of people coming to this Congress trying to focus us on what has been happening with D.C. General Hospital. And we basically told them, it's not our district. It's not a national issue. And a lot of people shied away from that because the LaRouche organization was at the forefront of trying to help us understand what was going on. We should all apologize. And I do now. I apologize because you're right. It is a national issue, and we could have understood this. And second, I think we have to say to our colleagues in the district, we want to help you, and because to help you, we help ourselves with this issue. And having said that, I think that many of us are going to have to refocus. Now that, I understand, caused quite a flurry in the room. Both Lynn and Dr. Aleem were there. You must have something to add, Lynn.
Well, what occurred actually in the audience, which was made up primarily of congressional staffers, was spontaneous applause after Congresswoman Waters said, I do now publicly apologize. And she later actually referenced the developments of September 11th as being pivotal in causing the shift in her thinking. And when she says, we could have known this, we could have understood it before, I believe what she is referring to is the fact that the LaRouche movement and the coalition had repeatedly warned in written statements and in our weekly lobbying, which we did for 9 consecutive straight months on Capitol Hill to every single office, telling them that in the event DC General Hospital was closed, that this would leave the capital of the nation defenseless, that it would be defenseless in the face of a serious epidemic. It would also be defenseless in the face of any kind of major accident or terrorist incident, which is, of course, always a possibility in the nation's capital. And again, they said, well, as she said, we don't have to listen. When Congresswoman Waters refers to the fact that the Congress was told this was a local issue, not a national issue, because it's clear that the only public hospital in the nation's capital, strategically located 1.5 miles from the capital, the closest hospital there, is a national issue. But they were told, particularly by Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, repeatedly, that this was a district matter, that this was a matter of home rule. In fact, Congresswoman Norton wrote a confidential memo to her congressional colleagues on May 9th, in which she states, quote, there is a mass march and lobby day scheduled for Congress. There may be many more such activities in the weeks ahead. And then she says that many of the groups that have come to my office, the majority of the participants have been followers of Lyndon LaRouche, and the publicity and events are being coordinated by LaRouche and the Schiller Institute, a LaRouche front. So the threat to Norton's colleagues was that they would be branded as, quote, collaborators of Lyndon LaRouche if they dared to step out on the issue of D.C. General. And many of the congressmen who were initially very, very supportive of this issue under that kind of pressure and related pressure from Al Born to Lose Gore and his forces succeeded in causing these congressmen and senators to back off. Notable was Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, who in fact had signed a statement, it's time to draw the line, saving D.C. General is a matter of international importance. And within days of him getting the position as Majority Leader in the Senate, he withdrew that support. And it was precisely that betrayal of the fight for public health which contributed to this disaster, to the us finding ourselves on September 11th, particularly in D.C., in a total state of unpreparedness, and of course a state of unpreparedness real nationally, which only the LaRouche movement has addressed. And that was our whole objective around the D.C. general campaign, to address this issue of the need for public hospitals.
I understand that there have actually been deaths as a result of the kind of negligence from the Congress. Could you tell us something?
Well, yes. I mean, we probably don't have a adequate method to count those deaths. It's to the point where maybe D.C. Is starting to stand for death count or death camp, and we have to change that. So I think in light of this explosive development with Maxine Waters apparently apologizing for all of her colleagues, because literally the whole Congress was reached by the lobbying effort of the Citizens Coalition, that this is a moment that is full of possibilities. It's good for her to apologize. That kind of confession is good for the soul, I'm told.
Right.
And it's so good, in fact, that it should lead to further good deeds by the members of Congress to atone for the possible deaths that have occurred, and to see to it that this offense, this negligence of duty in the past that led to these needless deaths won't occur in the future. And in order to do that, what they have to do is, in my opinion, three things. One, Congress needs to investigate the whole matter of how the contract to privatize D.C. General Hospital, to take the public's hospital from their possession and put it into the hands of a bunch of privateers out of the desert out there in Arizona. All that on both sides of the negotiations, that needs to be investigated, because I think we would find that all parties to that negotiation were negotiating in bad faith, and they never intended to uphold the contract. Then the second thing that Congress needs to do is to invent its own Frankenstein monster, the now defunct Financial Control Board, because we think that they probably engaged in some activities that would not stand strict scrutiny. They got a report, for example, from Price Waterhouse about this Doctors Community Healthcare Corporation that apparently contain information that could not be made public. And so we demand that Congress take a look at that report and see whether or not Alice Rivlin and everybody at the control board actually were operating above the law. And then the third thing that Congress needs to do, and this is most important, is that they need to create a public health authority for the District of Columbia. It would be ludicrous for anyone to think that we should turn to Mayor Anthony Williams and his health commissar, Ivan Walks, and give them the responsibility of restoring public health to the District of Columbia. These are a bunch of clowns, and they can't be trusted with taxpayers' dollars. They need to be set to the side. Congress needs to come in, set up a public health authority, and then reconstruct the public health system that was dismantled over the last several years. I mean, Mayor Williams and Ivan Walks, they've done their part, but of course, this didn't just start with them. It's been a long time in the dismantling of the system. And so Congress needs to step up to the plate, accept its constitutionally mandated responsibilities, see to it that the lives of the citizens of the District of Columbia are properly protected with a proper public health system. And of course, that brings up our mantra: we want a full service, fully funded public hospital that's in the budget. We want a state-of-the-art new hospital on the old campus, but rev up the old hospital as quickly as possible so that we can, among other things, treat the postal workers and others who are at risk from things like anthrax.
There are a couple of, your discussion brings up a couple points, but before we get to the anthrax, I know that it's been said since the anthrax crisis that there's been a lot of publicity around the country, including pictures of people in front of DC General, and people are under the impression, erroneously, I believe, you could say something toward this, that somehow DC General got reopened. Under the, of course, they probably know, since this process of shutting down public hospitals has been going on nationally, they know that their public hospital isn't open, and they probably remember that last year with the big flu epidemic, there were too few beds to get in their local hospital, but they hope that maybe something good came out of this and DC General is already open again. Maybe you could speak to that, Charlene.
No, it's not open again. And that's simply put. It's not open again, but they have the audacity of taking pictures and showing you DC General, and they took the H out, which was stood for hospital. So they have a building that they're calling DC General. People under the assumption that it is still a hospital.
So it's
it
like
is
Grand
a shell.
Central Station.
That's it. It's a shell that has been totally emasculated of everything that's in it because they have ripped out all of the equipment. They have stolen everything you could possibly steal. You have CT scans that are worth $1 million and some dollars was sold for $1. All equipment was sold for $1. The emergency services that are now being provided, that building was rented out or leased out for $10. So everyone is thinking that the hospital is still open. Let me get straight. There is no nurses, there are no doctors who are working in a hospital because there is no hospital. Mm-hmm. But they are still sending patients who are considered to be very high risk to an emergency room that cannot provide emergency needs such as emergency surgery or a bed so that we can monitor closely. And if they did provide it, there isn't a nurse or a doctor there. Who can do that now? When they closed the hospital, they got rid of the teaching institute, which DC General was.
Right. And
that's
they
exactly.
They also got rid of a lab, I understand.
Yes, I mean, under these circumstances, the name Dr. Frederick Seymour, who was the head of the chief of the microbiology lab, a state-of-the-art facility at DC General, it should be a household name. Because Frederick Seymour would have been the guy that would have taken care of those postal workers and others who had possibly been exposed to anthrax. But as it was, I mean, I was in Chicago. I turned on CNN. There's Anthony Williams and Ivan Walk standing in front of the closed DC General Hospital pretending like this is still a functioning institution. And the people that I was with say, oh, there's your hospital. I said that the hospital is closed. They are so cynical that they are using this shell of a hospital as a Hollywood backdrop to a press conference, and then I don't have words that can describe the depravity of the soul that would allow them to actually say to postal workers who had been exposed possibly to a deadly anthrax spore that they should go to a hospital that they just shut down. Can you imagine? I just can't express what that means. I mean, so these guys really have crossed over a line. It's intolerable. Congress needs to intervene and stop that before it goes any further. It's just a horrible situation. It should never be allowed to stand and exist.
Let me interject one thing. Eleanor Holmes Norton was there, too, on standing in front of the building, act like it was a real hospital. And, yes, they did send all those postal workers there, and everybody was in a state of confusion and chaos as to what to do, how to do it. And then they started sending public health nurses, which the only thing that would be a public health nurse no longer exists because they're under a private facility, which is called Children's Hospital. But they are the school nurses. And the school nurses came to help with the anthrax situation with great potentials of, if someone had had it on their clothes, could have been a transfer, and then our children could have been at risk. They didn't think beyond this because we do not have a director of health who's a preventive health care specialist, not at all. He's a psychiatrist. He knows nothing about preventing diseases. But he does know how to manipulate your mind, which he is doing quite well in front of TV, in front of an empty building.
Yeah, and he's operating in an environment where the philosophy has been, over the past 30 years, let's get out of providing for the general well, get the government out of providing for the general welfare of the population, which just shows up its insanity at a time of absolute crisis. Most of the time, Mr. LaRouche has often pointed this out, your general population thinks they can ignore this because it's only the poor that are being affected.
Yeah,
but you have no defense of public health if you permit the poor to be malnourished, to get diseases, and to have no facilities for, as a public hospital is first and foremost, although not only, it's very important you mention the teaching aspect of the hospitals, which is critical nationally. I mean, there are public teaching hospitals nationally that are being closed down.
Yes.
In Philadelphia, I believe they were closed down, and they're threatened elsewhere. I think Lynn's next, and then you.
Look, absolutely. And one of the things that the case of the postal workers in D.C. highlighted is that the problem is absolutely not a local problem. Saving D.C. General, reopening it, is indispensable, but it is not sufficient. Because what you saw in this case is that the entire federal bureaucracy, from the Center for Disease Control to the Surgeon General of the United States to the Attorney General to the Homeland Security to Fort Detrick, the U.S. military establishment, in other words, federal, state, and local officials down to Ivan War and Mayor Williams and others, were all complicit in a policy which was completely incompetent because it was guided and dominated by this notion of saving money rather than saving lives. Shareholder values before the general welfare. And as LaRouche, and he has issued for the medical task force for us nationally on behalf of his campaign, a beautiful statement, Build a National Defense Against Germ Warfare, in which he states that what's now required is a wartime mobilization to rebuild the basic infrastructure of the country, all of the measures that would go into what you would call public and related measures of sanitation, clean water, adequate and affordable supplies of energy, public transportation, and, of course, public health, which is centered around the public hospitals that are going to care particularly for the indigent, which would tend to be the major transmitters of disease. But what's required right now is a full-scale package. We've got to go back to the kind of policy that we had in the aftermath of coming out of really the Roosevelt period of the basic Hill-Burton legislation that mandated a certain basic standard of public health for the entire country. And things were looked at in terms of where people were, what the geography was, and therefore what was required. And it wasn't done on the basis of this fiscal austerity, budget balancing. How do we save money at the expense of human lives? So we need to reverse that. Hill-Burton was dismantled in the mid-70s under Nixon, and this murderous HMO policy was brought into its place. This dogma of privatization, free trade, deregulation, that's what's got to be reversed right now. So nothing short of that, nothing short of what Mr. LaRouche is calling for in his presidential campaign is actually going to be sufficient to deal with this problem.
We really need a war on disease, right?
I mean, yeah, and what I was going to say before was, you know, as bad as the fraudulent actions and incompetent actions of Ivan Walks and Mayor Williams may be, what is equally disturbing is the population. The fact that these postal workers, you know, and I have nothing against postal workers. My father worked for 30 years in the post office doing just that kind of work. But they all knew that D.C. General Hospital had been shut down. But yet they answered the incompetent call of the city's leadership to line up like cattle in front of a shell of a hospital. And so we have to look at this problem. What is it going to take? And I hope this is enough to mobilize the population so that they begin to demand what is needed. I just did a seminar at the clinic today telling people what they can do as individual households to help prepare themselves for the kinds of events that are taking place. But that kind of individual or household preparation is no substitute for what is really needed, which is a full-service public hospital. And so the postal workers and everybody else have now been put on notice that they're going to get more of this kind of stuff. And the only thing that prevented an even greater tragedy was just sheer luck. The sheer incompetence of whoever's sending out this anthrax. They didn't have a better way of infecting more people. That's just sheer luck.
Or they were trying to panic people the first time, and we don't know what's in Mr. LaRouche's statement. He said the key thing is what's coming next. Are you going to be prepared for what's coming next?
So this guy, we just lucked out with 9/11 where most of the casualties were deaths on the scene at the Pentagon. We lucked out when the tornado skipped over the Capitol. We lucked out with the anthrax. Well, wait a minute. Pretty soon the luck is going to run out.
Right.
And so we need to, as fast as possible, mobilize the population so that we get a real strong, powerful public health policy in the District of Columbia and then spread it across the country.
Absolutely. I understand you had some interesting remarks to make at this briefing that connected the this whole question of the Congress's responsibility for public health with their worship of Alan Greenspan. Was that what it was?
Did I say something like that? Well, you know, I mean, when I think the analogy I made was that as a physician, if I give a treatment to a patient and I know that one or two doses is supposed to help to cure the patient, and then I'm on my 10th dose, and the patient is still getting sick. I think that I'm either incompetent or I missed the diagnosis. I've got to rethink this whole thing.
Right.
So here we are with the 10th rate reduction by the Federal Reserve, and it's not working. So I think that either means Mr. Greenspan is incompetent or worse.
Uh-huh. Right. And, of course, that has everything to do with the fact that the financial community has said, primarily for decades now, don't invest according to the needs of the population. Go for shareholder value, go for making money, and simply murder those effectively, either by omission or commission, those who just can't afford at this particular time to pay for the health care that they need.
Yeah, but what kills me, though, is that we have a man who could give us some expertise in the situation, who could possibly show us the way on how to bring back our country and actually the world. And through the prejudice of these corporations, these big people, this hierarchy of whoever they are, they refuse to acknowledge him. And I can't understand, what are you waiting for? Are you waiting for us to actually start drowning in this? Well, guess what? We are. Right. The poor have started drowning. So you're waiting for the rich to drown. It's evident. Then will you go to him? And I wonder, what is it going to take before they recognize Mr. LaRouche? I have no idea what it's going to take. But somebody needs to step back, just like Walters did. Waters is her name, Maxine. Yeah, Maxine. Excuse me, Maxine. Just like Maxine Waters did. And acknowledge. We have somebody who has the knowledge. And we need to talk to him to get an idea, because Greenspan, as he said, is not making it. And I don't think he invests anyway, from my understanding. He keeps his money in his bed or something. I don't understand. He doesn't do any investment. So he has nothing to lose. But there are so many people who will lose, who are losing. And they don't know which way to go, because they're depending upon our educated economists to show us the way. And they're drowning us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the world is drowning with them, though. Right. We're going down the tubes.
Right.
And this world needs to wake up. People need to wake up. Stop denying that America would never do this to you. I love this country with all my heart and soul. When I lived in Europe, I had the flag out. I was proud to say I was an American, because I had gone to other countries and I had seen how the way they lived. And I said, oh, the only place for me is America. And I said, I understand. My country may not like me for my color. Makes no difference. I still have more liberties here than I could have in other countries. And I love the United States, period. Wake up, people. Just because you love your country doesn't mean that your country loves you. Mm-hmm. And as long as you have people higher ups doing horrible things like laying off everybody because they're not making the profit they want, you must realize that they're willing to let you die.
You're listening to EIR Talks. To replay this program or to read the transcript, visit our website at larouchepub.com. That's www.larouchepub.com. Welcome back to EIR Talks. We'll continue now with the LaRouche Connection, produced by Executive Intelligence Review.
I think it's useful to come back to the point that Dr. Alim was making about the postal workers, which really goes a lot broader, right? I mean, in the fight for public health, Mr. LaRouche began this fight for public health years ago, right,
Absolutely.
In terms of his presidential campaigns. And in the year 2000, he began a new phase of it in Washington. A lot of the emphasis was in Washington, and said, ban health maintenance organizations, right? In fact, you know, you might tell us something about what's happening with that, attention on that in Washington right now. But he came forward with things that everybody knew were true, that HMOs are to save money, not to save lives.
Almost
he was
definitely.
The only one. He said that the markets weren't going to make it, that we were a bankrupt nation. In their gut, people knew that. They wanted to deny it. They wanted to believe what the official Democratic Party was saying. So we have a problem with the people.
Yes.
I mean, the institutions have discredited themselves. No question about it. I mean, if the Democratic Party continues with Daschle's commitment to avoiding the hard issue of coming out with LaRouche's policies, saying in effect what Maxine Waters said, you know, we were wrong, LaRouche was right, we apologize, we must do what he said.
Mm-hmm.
If they avoid that, the Democratic Party is going to be finished, because this depression has just begun in terms of the United States. It's worse in the rest of the world, and it will get worse in the rest of the world, but it's just begun in the United States. So the institutions are basically on their last legs, and mm-hmm. institutions that don't respond to this crisis will be in that situation. But the people, you know, have got to realize that there's an individual responsibility, the kind of responsibility that, for example, you took when, you know, you weren't in politics particularly.
No, I wasn't.
A few months ago, you had a ton of bricks come down on your head with what was going on with DC General, and coming in touch with Mr. LaRouche, you realized he was right and his ideas, you realized he was right, and you took it as a personal responsibility for the human race, not just for Washington, not just for your job, not just for, well, a lot of people do that in wartime, but they think they don't have to do it other times. But we are in wartime, not in the sense of bombing Afghanistan, but in the sense of a war for the human race against an oligarchy that's willing to wipe out the large percentage of it. So what we need is this sense of the change in the population, some of which I think we have inklings of since September 11th, because people do realize they're at threat, they're at risk, and that they need something that they haven't faced before.
Yeah.
Already in 1996, I think, 97, LaRouche, through his affiliated FDR PAC, was sponsoring a series of public seminars in Washington, D.C. on healthcare, which Dr. Muhammad, Dr. Kildare Clark, and others participated in which it was being said, we have got to stop the HMOs. Managed care is killing people throughout the United States. Some people say hand the money over organizations. It is really the acronym, the HMOs, because you just hand over the money and it's there. I mean, it's great to have an HMO as long as you don't get sick. But they have killed public hospitals and other community hospitals and even private hospitals around the country. Because the hospitals can't get reimbursed, the doctors can't get reimbursed at the proper rate. There's all kinds of treatment, particularly preventive treatment, which is prevented through these HMOs. We have 1,500 hospitals in that order of magnitude that have closed in the last 15 years. And this has to be reversed. We have to stop the tide. This is what Congressman Conyers said to us back in March when he did his first hearing on public health. He had said, if you can win a single fight, there have been so many of these and not a single fight has been won on this level. If we can win a fight, we can reverse the tide of this. Even, it's insane, but in the aftermath of September 11th, there's still hospital closings. There's closings of public health services and so on across the country. This is another thing that Congresswoman Maxine Waters was very disturbed about. They have the big public hospital out in Los Angeles, King Drew, which services primarily the indigent African American and Hispanic population, is now being merged with two other hospitals. It's also being taken over by a private corporation with a criminal, what she thought might be a criminal racket. So it's the same story that we went through here in Washington, D.C. And again, we warn them. South Carolina, you have one state health laboratory which is capable of analyzing in a rapid form anthrax and other suspicious bioagents. And they do this for South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia. They just cut the budget for that laboratory by about 5%, which was mandated by these various state balanced budget laws, which were passed under it during the whole Gingrich period. And you have this kind of thing going through across the board where legislators and others will say, well, we didn't want to do this, but our hands have tied. It's written into these insane laws. So this entire thing has to be scrapped. And we have to say, no, now we're at war. As Mr. LaRouche says in his statement, war costs a lot of money and more, but losing the war to an attacking adversary costs infinitely more. And we have to mobilize ourselves in the appropriate fashion.
Well, in that same light, when the postal workers were going to D.C. General to be treated or looked at or glanced at, employees there were getting their pink slips.
Oh, really?
So they were also being
Yeah, well, you know, look, there's a glimmer of hope, perhaps, in this time of crisis. You know, it is generally recognized now that it was a bad idea to entrust airport security to private firms because
right.
they're looking at the
right.
bottom line,
right.
not necessarily security. And so now there's a move to federalize those security personnel. Well, now, if that's true, then by the same principle, shouldn't it also be the case that it's improper to entrust the health of the public to private corporations, HMOs and insurance companies, because they're also looking at the bottom line. And so it's lunacy when you understand, you know, that business goes in cycles. Well, if you can't afford to deliver health care when the business cycle is at, you know, a boom point,
right.
then what about when
right.
business goes
right.
south? You know,
right.
how are you going to continue to deliver health care under those circumstances? And so I think maybe this is a moment where the public can be awakened to that fundamental fact that health care is not a business. It's not an industry. It's crazy to think you're going to make a profit off of poor people. The only way you can do that is by cheating them, by killing them, by denying them services, and we just cannot tolerate that any longer if we expect to continue to exist as a nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, totally. I understand that there is some recognition of that in D.C. too, that one of these postal workers who died under the anthrax assault actually was being treated by an HMO.
Yeah.
Do you
yeah.
want to tell
yeah.
us about that? I don't know if that's gotten national coverage or not. No.
Thomas Morris Jr., who actually, it was released nationally, he made a 911 phone call the morning of his death, and it's very moving. He actually recounts in detail the symptoms that he has and then concludes that he believes that he's been affected by anthrax. The irony of this is that he dies on Sunday morning, the 21st of October. 3 days earlier, on October 18th, he has actually been to see his doctor. His doctor, who has received no instructions, even though it's on Monday of that week. This is the sequence is on just to go through the chronology. On Saturday, he notices that there's a suspicious letter that passes through his vicinity, which is leaking white powder. This is 2 days before the Daschle letter is received. They bring it to the attention of the postal authorities. They claimed it's being checked out. The postal workers are never told what happens. 2 days later, on Monday, October 15th, the Daschle letter is received, and immediately 4,000 congressional staffers are tested and treated and so forth and so on. Nothing is done with the Postal Service from which the Postal Office from which the letter emanated. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. No testing is begun until the following Sunday after you have two postal workers in the hospital diagnosed with pulmonary anthrax and two other postal workers, Thomas Morris and John Corsine, who are dead by that day of pulmonary anthrax. So Morris makes a call on that morning after having seen his doctor 3 days before, but the doctor has sent him home with a bottle of Tylenol. I believe this is Kaiser Permanente as his physician. But you have the HMO to blame, but you also have to blame the fact that there was no advisory given to any of the doctors or the medical personnel in the area. In fact, the only thing that the doctors in the area knew is what the CDC officials and others, the health department officials were saying at press conferences, which they gave every single day that week, in which they said no testing is required. They did a press conference at the Brentwood Post Office right. facility in which they chastised the postal workers for running to the doctor. They weren't going to waste money testing the postal workers or treating the postal workers. They didn't need it. So they should stop being paranoid and hysterical. Don't worry if you've got you're sniffling, if you have a fever, it's probably just the flu. And this is what the postal workers were in turn told by their physicians. So two of them are unnecessarily dead as a result of this kind of snafu, as LaRouche puts it, literally the red tape which is murdering citizens. And the real question is, what's next? because there's no indication that this mistake has now in any way been corrected for the postal workers or anybody else that could be in danger from countless number of things, particularly as we go into the holiday season where mail is going to increase and so forth and so on. There's not really appropriate measures.
Are you really allowed to sue your HMO? I thought they were above the law.
I think you have to die first. Wasn't that the way somebody died? He qualified to sue.
That is not even funny.
No, I know.
That is so tragic.
I know it's outrageous. And Kaiser Permanente, of course, has been sued from.
But here again,
places.
You see the incompetence of the district's Ivan Walks health director. Mm-hmm. The incompetence is this. Once you find out that the Hart building has been contaminated, then because you are the director of the district, it is your job to immediately find out
where it came from.
Don't tell me the CDC took over. It's still your job to the people who live in the district to find out where it came from, try to isolate it, and tell those people straight up. The CDC has taken control, but I, as your director of health for the district, I implore you, go to your doctor with the knowledge that you could be contaminated. Mm-hmm. Those two men who are in their graves now would not be. They would be talking. Because once you find out that you may be contaminated and you get early treatment,
It's preventable.
The two other postal workers who went to the adjacent hospitals in Virginia, Inova Fairfax, and who were treated just 2 days earlier, one has left the hospital and both of them are recovering and appear that they will be fine. So there is, it's unquestionable these deaths were unnecessary. And these are only two. We have been keeping, at Mr. LaRouche's suggestion, a body count since the beginning of the phasing down and dismantling of D.C. General Hospital. We've been keeping it since approximately April. And we have now on our list at least 55 people who we believe would be alive today if you had a full-service public hospital in the district. So this is quite extensive, and as Dr. Muhammad mentioned, we have no real way of keeping collecting a full picture. We're gathering this largely through homicide reports in the district. So we don't know the number of people who have a heart attack, who don't get reach a hospital room in time with a competent physician. Because of the increased traveling times and also the rerouting of ambulances because the emergency rooms are closed or other problems. There have been car accidents. I mean, this affects everyone that lives here, everyone who visits here, and so forth and so on. And we've seen this same kind of pattern repeated time and time again nationwide. This is one of the reasons that we have constituted this National LaRouche Medical Task Force, and the idea is to reach out and gather a group of medical professionals, of concerned citizens, and others in every single state that will constitute a campaign committee who will campaign on behalf of LaRouche's perspective of what to do to make sure that we have a national defense to rebuild our public health immediately and to provide that kind of organizing force to organize further not only the medical community but precisely what we've been discussing here, to also organize the citizenry to recognize that they take their lives in their hands. If they get to a hospital right now with the kind of procedure that exists, we really don't have, as Dr. Muhammad put it very beautifully at the hearing, there is no public health system. We can't talk about a public health system anymore. Right. It doesn't exist. Right. And that's the objective. That's what we're trying to create through this campaign, is a public health system once again in the nation.
Yeah, and then this crisis in public health is a national security emergency.
Right.
And it needs to be read as that. It needs to be portrayed to Congress and others in leadership as that, that they are negligent in their responsibilities to the national security the longer they continue to neglect public health.
In fact, you know, everything comes to the national policy issues, right? I remember quite clearly when Mr. LaRouche first got out of prison, the first speech that he gave at a national conference, he said something to the effect of, there will be a time when people will give up this anti-government stuff and will come running and say, the government has got to save us.
Right.
The government the government has to provide the jobs. The government has to provide the infrastructure. And to the extent that people are denying the reality of that, we have to get them over it. Because in fact, I mean, what do you need to do to get the national policy underway? You have to admit that the federal government of the United States is bankrupt, and you're going to have a total change in the nature of the government's relationship to the economy. It's going to have to issue credit for necessary building of hospitals to make sure that we have enough doctors, to make sure we have enough teachers, to build the transportation systems, the advanced transportation systems, the advanced water systems, the things that will actually provide for prosperity in the upcoming period.
But it's hard to believe that our great country is bankrupt when they can give the airlines $20 billion and somebody else $40 billion and somebody else $200 billion for something. I think it was the contract for a special plane they're about to put up with I can't think of the company that got it, but there's it's a $240 billion contract. If you see that money, then you say, well, we have money.
Well,
we have money.
And what can that money buy if you have no hospital to go to?
Well, that's
what
true.
Is that? You're not going to buy any hospital care.
And considering that if I'm correct, I think for every 1,000 people, there's only 4 hospital beds. Mm. Which means we have like 600,000 people in the district alone. My God, if 2,000 of them got sick in one day, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
We only have like 8 hospitals. Yeah. That's, to me, that's 32 beds. So you have a problem. They closed 200 beds when they closed DC General, who used to be in the 60s, a 1,000-bed hospital. The HMOs finally was able to bring it down and bring it down. We closed some more because we can't afford all of this. And now we have nothing. Wake up. My fellow people,
right.
Wake up. Let's get to moving here and stop this.
Right.
Well, you know, one of the points that I made at the Conyers briefing was that, you know, as a nation, we've been here before. You know, go back to the Roosevelt era. I mean, the country was at war, and there was an ongoing economic collapse. Okay, well, what did Roosevelt do? I mean, how did he respond to that situation? And the same thing would get us out of the situation today. The only thing different, of course, is that we don't have the leadership of a Roosevelt in the White House. We have an occupant who is the darling of the international corporations and who does not necessarily have the general welfare at heart. But perhaps he could undergo some kind of a personal transformation as he sees, you know, the America that we all have known crumbling around him.
Right.
We would hope for that kind of transformation, and we would hope that he would call for competent advice rather than continuing to hear the incompetent advice that he's now listening to.
And we've got to make sure he doesn't go to the head of the Democratic Party at the present time, because unfortunately, Mr. Gore's name is synonymous with the result of his policies in terms of welfare cutting, privatization, and all these other absolute horror shows for the and globalization for the American population. So it's a matter of really focusing, as you've indicated, on the solutions which Mr. LaRouche has put on the table.
Oh, definitely.
And mobilizing a popular movement that will demand that this be done, not a compromise, you know, look at what's in Congress and what can we do with it, but put it on the table. This is what has to be done. We have to have a military approach to the healthcare system. We we've made our advances in health as a nation under conditions of military warfare. We did it. That's where we got the penicillin, as I recall. That's where we got the vaccines that we need. That's where we got the trauma care. We're going to have to. We're almost over here. So if you want to have some last words, Lynn.
Well, I would just say, doing this, getting back to rebuilding the economy of the country under the prescripts of the general welfare clause, and also realizing we have to do this nationally, and in fact we have to collaborate with other nations to do this internationally. You're not going to have decent health any place in the world if you have places in the world where you have mass epidemic diseases. If you have the kind of conditions we're seeing prevailing now in Africa, where you have nations where the living standard has dropped to levels of 37, 38 years of age because of the ravages of disease, malnutrition, poverty, etc. So we have to take an approach, and the United States should appropriately lead this and can lead this if people follow the direction, the leadership which is being provided by Lyndon LaRouche at present, to in fact collaborate with other nations to develop our healthcare infrastructure, our general infrastructure, through great projects of development, not just here but worldwide. And if we take that approach, and if we use what occurred September 11th as a real wake-up call, as clearly it was at least for one, and I think probably many, many more congressmen, hopefully this can be a wake-up call for the entirety of the U.S. population.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
One of the problems with the national healthcare emergency we've had over the recent period is the lack of scientific information as opposed to panic mongering from our media. And we are fortunate to have with us a nurse, Charlene Gordon, who will give you some of the idea of what you should have seen on CNN during the days of the anthrax attack.
On September the 11th of this year, we had a horrible situation that occurred in New York and in D.C. Over 6,000 people were killed from a terrorist attack. Have you ever wondered what could have happened or what would have happened if anthrax had been on board? I'll tell you. With the way the Twin Towers came tumbling down and the ashes bellowing all over, thousands more would have died. I'm speaking of 50,000, 60,000. God was on our side, and this didn't happen. We're lucky. But in Washington, D.C., and in New Jersey, anthrax was found by an envelope. And it traveled throughout. And wherever it traveled, it left its mark. And we've had two deaths from two postmen who have died because of anthrax. Anthrax, the real name is Bacillus anthracis, and it came from a Greek word because it shows a black eschar or a scab located right on the skin when it's cutaneous. But anthrax comes in three different forms. Airborne, where you inhale it, it goes into your lungs. It causes you to have shortness of breath, fevers. It builds fluid around your lungs so that you can't really breathe, and it starts breaking your lungs down, and then you die. Then you also have cutaneous, where it comes on your skin, it looks like a blister. That blister, you know it's anthrax because it's a black mark, an eschar, a scab that ends there. It swells up. It's painful. But with that, you still live. With treatment, with that, you still live. And then you have GI, which is gastrointestinal. It's from the meat we eat that has anthrax. We've been quite fortunate in America. We've not had that to happen. But what do you do when you have or you found anthrax or you think is anthrax? You see a powder, and you see the powder on the table. What do you do about it? The first thing you do with that powder is you cover it up. Take a plastic bag. Take a trash bag. Take a plate. Take your hat. Take your coat, whatever, and just cover the material up. Look in the room and see who's all in there. Get their names, their numbers. Have everybody walk out the room, if it's in your house or where you work. Have them walk out the room. You close the door. You write their names and numbers down. And then you go and wash your hands with nice soapy water. And what do you do after that? You call security if it's at your job. And if it's in your house, you call the police. Let them come over and contain that area. But you will give the police or security the information of all the people that was in that room, because they need to be aware of their potentials if it is anthrax. Now, if it is anthrax, you will be treated with an antibiotic. If it's not, you have no fears. But what you do when you don't know, after everything is done, go home, take off your clothes, get in the shower, and take a nice warm shower. That is what the things that are important in knowing how to treat these particles you see and you're not sure what it is. If something is spraying down on you and you have no idea of what it is, the simplest thing is to get out of the way. Move it. But if you can't, you have a trash bag, put it over your body. This is temporary, but it's effective enough to possibly save your life, your children's, or your friends. Put something over your nose. If it's a handkerchief, that's all you have, use it. If it's a mask, that's all you have, use it. If it's a painter's mask, doesn't make any difference. If it's a hat, put it in front of your face and hold it there. You will be containing and possibly saving your life. In the future, if there are other things, I'll be glad to come back and inform you. But otherwise, hang in there, hold your head up, pray to God, and we'll win this.
You've been listening to EIR Talks. To replay this program or to read the transcript, visit our website at larouchepub.com. That's www.larouchepub.com. EIR Talks will return in a moment with closing announcements.